Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and it's great to be back again with another program. We have got a, well, I'm just going to call it a whiz banger of a show tonight. We'll use an old-fashioned D term. And I'm using old-fashioned terms because we have a birthday girl in the house tonight who might remember some of these old-fashioned D terms. Hey, Sam.
Jamie, is that a veiled way of saying I'm old?
I would you never say that.
I know you wouldn't, but good try. I appreciate that. But it's a gorgeous day here in Colorado. Actually, it's like the first day we haven't had thunderstorms. So everything's very green, and it was sunny out today and just awesome. But I hear that's not the case on the East Coast. What's going on with you guys?
Oh, we've got a whole line of thunderstorms coming across that came across Pennsylvania and Maryland right along the Mason-Dixon line. So I'm actually listening to some pretty stupendous thunder in between recording here tonight. So should be fun. Everybody cross your fingers that we don't lose power and therefore lose the recording and have to reschedule this. So everybody's going to wish for that one. But we've got a great show, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Exactly. So are all of us. And it's your thunder might be a good backdrop for what we're discussing tonight, actually. So, Dr. Joe, how are things down in Memphis?
Hey, everybody. It's actually spectacular here in Memphis, you know, in the high 80s and sunny and beautiful weather. So we've been busy prepping for what looks like to be a busy summer with labs and et cetera all over the place. So we'll talk more about that later.
Good deal. Glad to hear that you have a busy schedule. So speaking of thunderstorms and such, we're going to go to the weather. So let's hear about the weather and what's going on out there on the East Coast.
So let's just start from today and work our way backwards through the past week, because there's been some pretty nasty weather going on in the East Coast today and Texas, Oklahoma. For right now, I'm looking at 278 wind reports from the Storm Prediction Center for today, and that's Tuesday, May 15th. There were a lot of really severe storms, squall lines that moved all the way from eastern Ohio through Pennsylvania into New Jersey, New York, and then southern New England. Here in central Pennsylvania, where I'm located, we had wind gusts of about 60 miles per hour, which is impressive for us. Yesterday, there were also severe storms all across the plains, looks like Missouri. And then, of course, there was the mid-Atlantic squall line, which is being hotly contested as to, is it a derecho or is it not? Weigh in online. It's all the rage on weather Twitter. But outside of severe weather, there's also been a lot of other crazy things happening. There was hail in Colorado on Monday, which had to be shoveled because there was so much. And let's see, severe weather, I covered that. Let's talk about the volcano in Hawaii. That's been kind of all over the news lately. 19 fissures have opened up since May 3rd, and that's when the next day there was a 6.9 magnitude earthquake, and it was actually erupting again today on Tuesday. So there's a lot of concern that Kilauea is going to have a volcanic explosion. And speaking of explosions and thunderstorms, there was a pyrocumulus cloud, which is a thunderstorm cloud that develops from an intense wildfire that turned into a thunderstorm that then produced hail. If you're wondering how rare that is, it's pretty rare. I've never heard of that happening before. I've heard of thunderstorms producing like lightning and things from wildfires, but this actually turned into such a strong storm that it produced hail after developing essentially from the intense rising air from a wildfire. And that's what I have as far as weather briefing notes. Anybody have any questions, comments?
Well, we do want to talk a lot more about the volcano, but first of all, the listeners are probably wondering if Kyle hasn't changed his voice.
Kyle sounds very different. I'll just say.
We threw one up here just for fun for the listeners. This is Becky DePodwin. She's another meteorologist, and we're going to talk more in depth with her in just a minute. But we don't want to leave Kyle out of the mix. He's here with us, too. And what do you think about those pyrocumulus thunderstorms? Kyle, because Kyle knows how much I hate hail. And when I heard, Becky, the other day that, you know, there is, you know, I think they said quarter-size hail coming down, I kind of freaked, although fortunately we never got it here. What do you think, Kyle?
Oh, man, Sam, the pyrocumulus clouds and things, those are super interesting. I mean, it just one of the ways that one hazard, wildfires, can produce, you know, their own hazards in and of themselves, not just releasing, you know, all this debris and everything into the atmosphere and the ash and soot particles, but now you have all of, you know, it can develop its own thunderstorms. So fires truly can make their own weather.
So Kyle, Becky covered kind of what we've been going through. What is the outlook for this next week?
Well, Sam, looking ahead for the next week across the U.S., it's actually an active week of weather in store. That is something that, of course, we expect this time of year as we transition from late spring into early summer. But looking ahead, we have some pretty warm weather, which is going to extend those drought conditions across the south central United States. Heavy rain will continue to impact our friends along the east coast and down into the southeast United States as this latest disturbance comes off the Gulf of Mexico, up the east coast through Florida and all those eastern east coast states. And look for some high winds on the plains, increasing fire danger as well.
I'm telling you, the East Coast just can't cut a break after the winter they had. I think if I was in Pennsylvania, Becky, I'd be heading it back to Colorado. We get our thunderstorms, but nothing like the West Coast has had. So I'm going to just throw in and introduce Becky because we have a number of topics to talk about. So why don't you tell the listeners a bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I am originally from Colorado. I grew up in northern Colorado and went to college out there. Received my undergraduate degree in meteorology from the University of Northern Colorado. My first job was with a small company called Day Weather Incorporated in Cheyenne. From there, I went to Wichita, Kansas, to the AccuWeather Severe Weather Center, where I was a storm warning meteorologist. Did a lot of severe weather chased some storms, saw some crazy hail, had my apartment get hit by an EF3 tornado. And then I transferred to AccuWeather headquarters in State College, where I was an operational forecaster for a few years. But now I work more kind of on the business side of things while still applying that meteorological knowledge. And I am, gosh, so close, 2 months away-ish from finishing up my master's in emergency management from Millersville University. So I'm really excited about that. I'm very passionate about crisis and risk communication and how people perceive and react to the weather. And then also, I'd like to consider myself somewhat of a mental health advocate in terms of both meteorologists themselves and then also, obviously, these impacts of trauma on disaster victims.
And that is a very unique perspective we're going to talk about. But tell me, what does an operational meteorologist do, weather forecaster?
Oh, that's a good question. It kind of depends on a lot of things. When I was in Wichita, we have private clients that we issue very personalized, specific warnings for, very time-sensitive warnings. So it was really just hands-on, constantly looking at the radar, talking to clients, briefing clients. At headquarters, we do a lot of things with newspapers, with radio, and then, of course, updating the forecasts constantly to our digital products like the app, the website. Really, we're just always looking, updating, trying to make sure that we are as accurate as possible.
Well, I tell you, I love the AccuWeather app. I definitely use that quite a bit. Go ahead.
Oh, that's great to hear. And I see Kyle said I should mention I'm also the host of another podcast, too, actually. The main one I would say is In the Elements, which I host with Dakota Smith. And that's really, we like to tell kind of the personal side of weather stories. And then I'm also the co-host of Ice Station Houseman, which is with Jimmy Marks and Joel Houseman. And we basically just have fun talking about whatever sciencey thing we feel like at the time.
Well, we'll definitely have to tune in on those, and Jamie will put the links up. Hey, Jamie?
Yeah, you'll definitely have to send me the links to those so I can make sure I put them in the show notes.
I can do that. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, because I think our listeners are kind of become weather geeks like we have. That's all Kyle's fault.
We're
Kyle
things.
For everything. Well, you know, the whole mental health perspective is interesting because we talk a lot about that in terms of disaster workers and first responders in general. But it's not something one associates with meteorologists necessarily. So you made us a bit of a list on some things that I found quite fascinating. The first being risk perception of severe weather. And that's kind of a more generalized thing. But tell us about that.
So it's just one of these things that I've sort of come to at least try and understand, especially when communicating the risk of hurricanes, of tornadoes, is what are the words and how you say them that are going to cause people to react. But then also, what kind of things can you say that may cause unnecessary fear in people? For example, there was some severe weather in Oklahoma last week, and the word outbreak was used to describe this severe weather setup. And I received some feedback from a friend who lives there that to them, anything that uses the phrase, this is more Oklahoma specifically, which has been hit with multiple EF5s, the most recent one being in 2013, which took several lives, and it was a pretty devastating thing. So when people of Moore, Oklahoma hear the words outbreak or life threatening, their mind immediately goes to that day in 2013. And if the setup for severe weather isn't looking like it's going to rise to that level, it's something that we need to be cognizant of, because that triggers storm anxiety for these people. Another example is after Harvey, hearing rain fall on the roof gave people storm anxiety, because during Hurricane Harvey, it rained and rained and rained and flooded for a week. And so it's just things like that, it's kind of a really localized thing that it takes some time and some listening and being perceptive and having empathy to really understand a lot of these localized nuances of how people in various regions react and perceive weather threats.
Wow, you can imagine how people in New Orleans are still dealing with any kind of weather too. So right. What about after some of these severe weather events? You know, you're kind of leaning into that. You know, the post-Katrina, the post-F5 tornado. You know, since people have storm anxiety, what about PTSD? Are we finding a lot of that related to weather?
We are. I don't know that there's a lot of research on it just yet. I think it's slowly starting to come to light just how much people truly suffer on a very in-depth emotional and mental level after disasters. I've seen a lot of comments from people who really just don't grasp it and don't understand how people can be severely traumatized after an incident like a hurricane or a tornado. But there actually was an article that came out last week, and honestly, it honestly broke my heart. There was a 14-year-old boy who survived the Moore tornado as an elementary school kid, and he committed suicide. And people speculated, probably rightfully so, I don't know the exact details, but that he suffered PTSD after living through that tornado and seeing several of his friends at the elementary school killed in the tornado. And it's things like that kids, adults, anybody, if you go through something traumatic, even if you yourself survive, you may have seen someone get injured, someone get killed. You may have witnessed some of these really traumatizing things, like your house being blown away, your possessions floating away in a flood. And that's not something that's easily recovered from physically or emotionally and mentally. You know, you can get your belongings back, but you still have lost a sense of maybe safety, just to have realized that it can all be taken away from you in an instant by this thing that you have no control over, which is the weather. And it's part of the reason why I became a meteorologist, not that I was scared of it necessarily, but because I couldn't control it. And that scared me, and so I wanted to know as much about it as I possibly could, which is often also why you find meteorologists had experienced some triggering event as a child, a snowstorm or a hurricane that they lived through that then inspired them to be a meteorologist.
Ooh, interesting. We'll have to touch more on that. So, well, nobody understands much better than Dr. Joe in terms of, you know, we both deal with disaster victims and see, and this is so hard on disaster responders because where a medic in the field may take someone to the hospital and they have a short-term relationship, these are people that, you know, their situation goes far beyond whatever their particular injury may be when we hear they've lost their whole family. What do you think, Joe?
Well, I, my brain's sort of going in multiple different directions here. I think there's no question that the effects of the storm, whatever that may be, continue to linger with people for a long period of time. And I worry a little bit that, you know, we even see some of that in the response community where we've become complacent to the dangers of bad storms and tend to get so mission focused that we sometimes take risks beyond reasonableness in trying to complete the mission.
Point. Jamie?
Well, and you know, it's funny you say that, Joe, because I was thinking about, you know, PTSD and the effects on responders from weather-related disaster events. And it took me right back to that harrowing experience you relayed to us from your trip down to Houston, where the two guys got sucked into the drain pipe. And the effect that had on your team and the effect that must have had to those two guys. And we covered that in the podcast back when we were covering the hurricane aftermath and response. But I'll have to link to that episode in the show notes. But take us back to that point. And you know, does that still come to mind when you think about going on future events?
Oh, I think there's no question that it does. You know, that was an incredibly sobering moment for the entire system. Just to recap briefly, these were two very experienced swift water rescue guys who were on a highway that was, you know, sort of on a levee going through farmland. And there was a car off in the ditch on one side. And it was, you know, just next to a bridge that crossed over a creek. So they stopped up on the highway and went down to take a look at the car, one, to make certain nobody was in there, and two, if nobody was in there, to at least mark it so that no one else would put themselves at risk trying to get down there and check it out. And literally with almost no notice at all, and despite handling all the, handling the safety precautions appropriately. One of those guys, as he worked his way around the back of the car, literally got sucked into a 24-inch drain pipe that was at the bottom of that ditch and pulled him down in there. And his partner, you know, attempted as best he could with the rope and safety gear to hold him out. And couldn't do it until he also was sucked through this drain pipe. And both these guys took a trip through that drain pipe, which luckily sprayed them out into that creek that was, 100 yards away or so. And a half mile downstream, they both managed to make their way back to the shoreline and had no lasting physical injuries. But, had there been a grate or a limb or something stuck inside that that drain pipe, both those guys would have perished that day. And you know, it just goes to show you that even the best trained, most experienced guys can still get themselves in trouble, and how easily it is to be misled by Mother Nature, and how important it is to maintain an incredibly high level of respect for the danger that storms and their aftermath can result in.
And Joe, just personally, I can imagine, you know, USAR guys don't get lost very often, if ever. So for that to happen on your watch, that would have had a profound effect on you going in, even though it was something nobody would have anticipated or controlled, that would have had a huge effect on probably the whole USAR group, don't you think?
Well, it absolutely did. As a matter of fact, we did a bit of a safety stand down after that, and had those two guys, once they had sort of gathered their wits about them, and I'm sure changed their shorts, come and present to many of the other teams and explain what happened, and talk about their experience, just so that we could share that literally near-death experience for those two guys, and to hopefully educate the rest of the guys that were there and working in that same environment.
Yeah, it was probably cathartic for them to be able to do that. Kyle, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, we've talked about and we've touched on, you know, the stress injuries that can occur after physically experiencing something, both as a disaster survivor as well as a first responder. But increasingly, we're so interconnected now, you can live through these disasters and not even physically be there. The amount of information that comes out on social media, in the news, through the broadcast media and those traditional means, that can have a profound effect on people as well, because we can look at things. People are sharing, they're telling their stories with these digital media platforms, as well as on the news as well. And this is all being shared. We're surrounded by this information. So for a lot of people, they can feel that they're very connected, and they can live through literally what these survivors live through without ever having physically been there. So that's something to keep in mind as well.
That's a really good point. So Kyle, I got to ask, what got you into meteorology?
Well, Sam, what got me, it was a combination of two things. First thing was I was living in a small town in southwest Minnesota, and I remember my parents talking about a tornado warning. We rushed down to the basement, and I remember we had a glass window that faced out towards the west. And I will never forget looking out that window to the west and seeing the lightning, most lightning I've ever seen in a storm. There's a water tower in the distance that was backlit by lightning, and then there was something next to it, which I later learned was a tornado. I went back there about 3 years ago to that street by our house, looked down the road. Sure enough, there was that water tower. And that was my first introduction to weather. But beyond that, what really solidified it was my experience with amateur radio as a skywarn spotter. And I said, this is definitely something I can do. I want to help people by understanding this this weather thing a little bit more, and the rest is history.
Well, Becky, I guess you were right. That's how meteorologists are born. Would you agree? You apparently are agreeing with Kyle on what he said. Any thoughts on what Joe or any of the rest of them had to say?
Yeah, I think what Kyle had to say about social media now really connecting us to disasters, and that's something that is both really beneficial and also really difficult for meteorologists who are forecasting an event. Harvey in particular was extremely difficult for me because I have a sister that lives just west of Houston. And so I'm pouring over tweets on social media and pictures and looking at the radar and constantly making sure she's okay. And that went on for days. And I think that was the same for, I can't even imagine, for people working at the National Hurricane Center, you know, forecasting this event that's, you know, extremely dangerous, especially with Irma, who, you know, made landfall in Florida and impacted them personally. It's just one of these things that we're now able to be so easily connected to it all the time. It's not just you see an after action report on something and you read about it. It's you see it as it's happening. You see these people calling out for help, and you know you're thousands of miles away and can't do anything about it. So that certainly has an impact on the mental health of a forecaster that one may not really immediately think of. And that's not at all to take away from the obvious mental aspects of the disaster victims themselves, but just more for us to be cognizant of, you know, to take care of ourselves when we're forecasting significant events like that.
Well, and we're going to talk more about that. But, you know, when we were deployed, Joe and I both, for all of these hurricanes or tornadoes, hurricanes, I was right, talking tornadoes. It was amazing because Jamie and Kyle were basically holding down the fort and doing some, you know, in the field interviews with us. And our readership just went crazy, or listenership, because people really knew that they were getting, you know, the distance between us and them was less, even more so than what you see on TV. So it seemed to make an impact. Right, Jamie?
It did. And I think that that was really... one of the high moments of this podcast, I think, when we were covering those back-to-back hurricanes. And you're right, Kyle and I were holding down the fort and doing episodes and reaching out and doing phone Skype connections with you guys in the field and getting updates with what you were doing and what you were seeing on the ground. And so it was giving people, the responder community, a real-time look at what was going on, because that's not something that is always covered in the mainstream news, what's going on in the behind the scenes with the responders. And it also brought to mind some of the things that what you were talking about, Becky, was the... you know, the forecasters dealing with the challenges of covering these events and the effect it has on them. And it occurred to me that more and more often now we're seeing the forecasters being put in the position of being potential victims in order to cover the storm firsthand, so to speak. And I wonder what effect that has on both the forecasters and their people manning the anchor desks back in the studio, having to go continually to these their colleagues out in the field in some pretty harrowing situations sometimes.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think for the most part, when people are in the field, they are very well aware of their risk and hopefully place themselves in a spot where they're not in as much danger. But, you know, we see reporters in, you know, waist high water or, you know, extremely close to a tornado. And you do kind of have to wonder, are they really comfortable with that? I think it takes a very special kind of person. I've always said I would love to do it, but I don't know if I'd actually have the guts to be out there in 80 mile per hour winds.
It would blow you away, no doubt. Unlike Jim Cantore.
Yeah.
He's a little Jim more Cantore solid.
I love that.
He's now meme worthy, right? I mean, people like judge how severe the storm's going to be if Jim Cantore shows up in their town.
Right? Yeah,
for real. But I love how he interacts with the people there. You can tell he cares about them and what's going on. It's not just, let's make the weather fantastic. He really does care about what's happening. Anyway.
I think that's true of all in-field reporters. I remember during Harvey, and I keep going back to Harvey, but it's still so fresh in my mind. There was a reporter in Houston that actually helped facilitate a rescue that she saw happening while she was on the air. And so I do think there is some value. There can be arguments both ways, but I think there is some value in having people out in the field just to draw attention to the situation and show people like this is happening. You need to care about this, if nothing else.
Well, you see that with these storm chasers too, that they're there right after the tornado or the event occurs. And it's hard not to become engaged with everything that needs to happen at that point when people are injured and they're buried. And you know, how do you broadcast your stuff, but not, you know, and a lot of them do end up getting engaged and they have another camera watching them. So that kind of takes us to the next topic, which is the effect on meteorologists. And we kind of touched on that already. But what are some of the other things that you guys go through? And I realize like you and Kyle do things in a very different environment, but I'm sure there's some commonalities.
Yeah. So just even we've sort of talked about just knowing that we're forecasting the significant event that is likely going to cause loss of life. That's never an easy thing to do. And there are days, whether it's a significant tornado outbreak or a hurricane, that as the event gets closer and the forecast becomes more clear, like you just get this sinking pit in your stomach and you don't sleep because you're just nervous as to what the outcome is going to be. And you know that it has the potential to be extremely bad. And if that ends up happening, was there anything more you could have done? Is there anything more you could have said? Could you have said something differently that would have caused people to react differently, therefore saving their lives? So there's that aspect of it. And then just on just a very life impact type aspect. It's not easy working shift work. And the majority of meteorologists, if they're operational, work shifts, whether that's rotating shifts or set schedules. It's usually overnights, early mornings, which can lead to lack of sleep, which can lead to a whole host of other mental problems or issues, I should say, rather. For me, lack of sleep really triggered depression. I couldn't ever sleep. And so my mental health just really suffered. And that's not something that people really talk about a lot. There's a suck it up mentality. Like you're in forecasting, you're a meteorologist. You knew what you were getting into, just deal with it. And that's just, it's not helpful in my opinion. I would love to see that mentality change. Team no sleep is not a badge of honor. I get that it's a thing that bonds people together, but it's one of those things that we'd be better served if we tried to help each other figure out how to be healthier rather than just saying, suck it up.
Yeah, we can relate that a whole lot to EMS. Jamie, you had a thought for Joe.
Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, Joe, this is something that we've in the healthcare community have been really looking at. And there's some science I know out there, some research on, you know, the effects of shift work on people's health in general and their increased risk for cardiovascular disease and some other challenges, correct?
Oh, there absolutely is. As a matter of fact, the new agenda for EMS for 2050 has, a significant component of that. And there's been even some evidence-based suggestions for EMS related to shift work and lack of sleep and, the risk that puts not only EMS workers but our patients at.
Wow, that's good to know. It's interesting to see how this parallels with meteorology, and I can imagine in those, you know, dicey moments of you know, broadcasting the weather, that it's kind of like us being on a train wreck or something. And you made a comment in your notes about, you know, lack of sleep being a badge of honor. God knows. I mean, it's kind of like that way with us, especially in the disaster world. Who needs sleep, you know? But it's sad that the same thing happens in terms of people going, well, if you can't hack it, maybe you're in the wrong business. Well, I don't know that that's really the best way to handle things. We kind of went through that with EMS years ago, and it's certainly gotten better, but it sounds like it's still a work in progress for meteorologists. What's your take on that, Kyle?
Well, Sam, I echo a lot of Becky's thoughts and comments. It is definitely a challenge for meteorologists with some of the rotating shift work and things, as well as the component of being engaged with an event as the ingredients are coming together, as the event unfolds, pushing the information out. And then once the information goes out, so rarely do you hear what the final effects are. Did people survive that event? You know, were there casualties and things? And thinking about that as well from a forecaster perspective absolutely does parallel things in the EMS world sometimes. Like we will, you know, respond, like in my world in ski patrol, we respond on the hill if it's perhaps very rarely, but say a very bad accident, and you know, we're doing life-saving critical interventions on our way down the hill. We hand that patient off to EMS or into the ambulance, and we sometimes hear, sometimes don't, what the final outcome was. So there's always that kind of that wonder, and you know, did I do this right? Did I do that right? But you know, going back and doing those after action reviews and things can absolutely help. But closure is something that I think kind of is the word that we're searching for here. Is that there's the disconnect between, you know, the information goes out. As meteorologists, we send the information out. We issue warnings and watches and all these different products to instruct people to, you know, take protective actions. And through the preparedness that has been done both by us and by our local counterparts in public safety and emergency management, we hope that, you know, all the information that's received properly, interpreted properly, and that everyone takes protective actions and is prepared, and that there are no ill effects from it. So there's always that aspect of it where you wonder, you know, did I issue this warning early enough? Did I need to really wait that one more radar scan to be sure, or should I, you know? And so now you get into, well, do I jump a little bit earlier next time? So it's constantly weighing the confidence in what's happening versus, you know, do I, you know, overwarn people and risk the cry wolf syndrome?
And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of the Disaster Podcast. We cut this episode into two parts. We're going to pick up with the rest of this episode on disaster weather and some related topics coming up in next week's episode. So stay tuned. In the meantime, I want to thank everybody for coming on the show this week, and also thank our sponsors, Paragon Medical Education Group, for their continued support of the Disaster Podcast. Make sure you check out all of the amazing educational opportunities and customized disaster-related training exercises they can bring to your area and jurisdiction. So head on over to ParagonMedicalGroup.com or check them out on Twitter at ParagonMedEDU. That's it for us. We're going to go ahead and head on out. And as Sam says in the second episode at the very end, disaster weather is not your everyday weather.